Now our next speaker is a fellow mayor, Councillor Ray Brown, Mayor of Western Downs Regional Council based in Dalby. Ray's going to address us on how to deal with major industry changes on the ground using a Western Downs Regional Council as a case study. And of course his shire shares with us growing oil and gas and coal developments. So please join with me in welcoming Ray.
Welcome everybody, and thank you Mayor Robin for the opportunity to be here today in your fine area. I often drive through here admiring the magnificent agricultural land that you have across the region. So I am a farmer, is my background. I've been in local government 22 years. In the last two we were a freshly amalgamated shire of six, or actually five and a half into one. And as I mentioned just previously, what happened was one of our rocks just became a new shire, and that's how quick it can happen. The 38,000 square kilometres I look after is right there in the hub of the Surat Basin. We just about control 85% of the Surat Basin. The major towns of Dalby, Chinchilla, Miles and Wandong have a population of 30,000. Here it comes, it's called the juggernaut. Enormous wealth. We talk about the speed of things. Everyone knows about local governments and the three little boys that are playing, and one young boy says, well look, my dad's that fast, he's a carpenter, he can drop a hammer off a two-storey building, he can be downstairs and pick it up before it hits the ground, he's quick, very fast. The other young fellow, his father's a bricklayer, he said, my father, he can drop a brick from 10 stories and be down the ladder, pick it up before it hits the ground. He's very fast. The third little fellow, young Johnny, says, well, my dad works for the local government, the council. He is very fast. He finishes work at 4 o'clock. He beats me home from school. He's got his feet up at 3:30 having a beer. He is quick. We sit on a bed of coal of 38,000 square kilometres. We have every industry coming at us at the moment. We have 81 projects identified, equating to $140 billion of infrastructure. We don't talk in millions anymore, it is billions. It is extremely scary. We have the open cut coal mines to the coal seam gas industries, to the underground coal gasification, which if I can get an opportunity to talk about. Can you take me off one? Okay, this is what's identifying in relation to coal mines, proposed coal mines, coal deposits. I don't know whether you can see the little blue ones coming in. I'm dealing with 31 different companies in relation to it. Projected growth is roughly 43,000 new employees to come into the region. I only have 30,000. Do you want to know what impact is? When you get a little town called Miles, has a population of 1,200 people, only 650 houses. We approved 880 new houses just before Christmas. We have an application in front of us now for another 530. That is growth. It comes down to planning, and the local government is that key resource. In Queensland, we control water, sewage, waste management, economic development. On top of that, I have a local government area that I have to look after. 80% of my time is factored on the energy sector. We have between 30,000 and 40,000 wells to be drilled These are just the start of production wells. Impact, our underground water aquifers, and our lifeblood of our country. You destroy those underground water aquifers in any way, 22 out of my 23 towns need that underground water aquifer. 16,000 stock and domestic borers need that underground water aquifer. I have a farm gate equivalent of $1.8 billion per annum comes out of my region. We produce 52% of the grain-fed cattle of Australia out of our region. Anybody like this playing in my backyard has to answer some very quick questions, and we need legislation and policy from the state government to make sure they don't disturb our future to produce food and fibre for many, many years to come, not the 30 years that they wish to play here. With the coal, at present I have 6 power stations. One fully big coal one, and the rest are coal seam gas. We have 19 power stations in our program. 3 solar, 1 wind, 2 big coal-fired ones, and the rest are coal seam gas. There is no doubt we will be the energy sector province of the future. Is this good? We'll discuss this in a minute about prime agricultural land. The solar ones, are they a clean green image? I had a company from Spain walk into my door the other day. Massive, billions of dollars of investment. They wanted 4,000 acres. They were going to clear every tree off the place, and they wanted 25,000 megalitres of water per year. And you tell me that's green? There's a few answers we need to before we allow all these prospects. Underground coal gasification. This is the monster of them all. For those that you are not aware, they actually burn the coal underground. It's called longwall mining, and the fire rages at about 1600 degrees Celsius. Of the 5 companies in Australia, we have the whole 5. And as of this morning, as I drove into this building, our minister announced the first of the carbon sequestration plants, and they will be in Queensland. One plant alone at Wandoan from GE America is a $5.5 billion complex. Wandoan, a town of 380 people, have a coal mine called Xstrata on the western side of it that will produce up to 100 million tonne of coal per year to become the largest coal mine in the world. This will be 500 metres from the town. Anybody that saw Four Corners the other night won't be happy with this. We then have a power station on the other side of the town that's going to be a carbon sequestration plant with the power station. This little town, approvals at the moment of 1,124 new houses. The council, in their wisdom 3 years ago, decided they needed a little bit of economic development, so they cut up some land for housing. They sold it off to people. Maximum price was $7,000 per allotment. Curb, channeled, underground, power, water, sewage. Those same parcels now making $115,000 in the matter of 18 months. The LNG plants and lines, it's not just the well that has an impact on our rural agricultural lands, it's the pipelines that feed these wells. At the moment I have 40 pipelines going across my region. Some landholders who only have 1,200 acres of prime agricultural land have up to 3 pipelines going across their place. A lot of these are in control traffic areas and laser level land, where the simple thing is that a tyre track can run water the wrong way. These are critical areas that are being imposted on by these sort of industries. Here's some of the companies that are in our region and how fast they can come. In relation to one on Thursday afternoon, they walked into the door and informed me that they're going to spend $180 million in my region immediately. They wanted 150 employees by the end of this month. And they're going to roll into Toowoomba for a start with a bus, a recruitment bus, and then go Dalby, Chinchilla Miles, and they thought by the time they get to Wondowan, they'll have 150 personnel. I said, you've got to be joking. He said, not a problem. I said, how are you going to find them? Our unemployment rate is 1.4%. Financial crisis, never heard of it. What they do is that these jobs, there will be not one under $100,000 a year. That's how they got the recruitment. Where do they take them from? 750 employees I have. They love us. We are the breeding and the training ground for machinery experts. The other little companies in our towns, the concrete manufacturer, the steel fabricator, all of a sudden they lose their staff because they can't afford the wages that those industries can pay. If you link this with the 46.5 cents on the dollar that they're paying the federal government in tax, and the royalties the federal government also get by exporting this massive wealth, where are the federal boys in this campaign? I am continually at the state to develop policy and regulations in legislation to make companies accountable. They're getting wonderful royalties. From the coal seam gas industry alone from my region, they will extract $850 million a year just from the gas sector. The one mine at Wondowan will extract $1.4 billion a year in royalty to the state government. These are huge numbers. We just finished a 2050 community plan, taking into account that sort of development. What did our people want? They want better infrastructure. Roads, rail, airport. The second thing they wanted was better medical services, doctors and dentists. And the third thing they wanted was security of water. Now, if we're going to live west of the Great Divide and enjoy a rural atmosphere, there's a few things in life we need. We can go through every drought and every flood, but those sort of criteria are essential, along with electricity and telecommunications. What was the greatest fear of our 2050 community plan? Was the word lifestyle. The word of lifestyle is different wherever you go. I have a lot of rural subdivision areas in my community, particularly in the Tara, Chinchilla and Dalby area. Small acreages on very poor agricultural ground. They live there, tranquility, the birds, the bees, and a lot of times unemployment benefits. But there's still people. My greatest resource in my whole region is my people. And the government should not lose track of that. That's what makes us here today and our communities for the future. Wonderful wealth below our feet, but it's our people that actually are our wealth. The issues also of lifestyle could also mean I finally have a job. I can now build a house. Can also mean a business house in our town saying I've got more backsides coming through the door, generating more wealth. The value of my home has increased in our rural towns. Over the last 15 years, we've had 10 years of drought in my region. What would have happened if we did not have the energy sector? I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying development at all costs. But what we've occurred is our houses have increased in value. I've had additional 4,000 people last year alone come into my region and set up residence. On a weekly basis, I do the nationalisation ceremonies for new people coming into our region. They're not from interstate. A lot of these are coming from overseas. So we have this other massive thing coming at us called cultural differences. 31 of these mining sectors at the moment are actually setting aside prayer areas because they've got to cater for different religious bases for prayer. I mean, these things are unbelievable. I look after a very conservative Christian belief communities. So when somebody comes to me and says, we would like a mosque, can you find me some suitable land? We accept all communities, and Australia is very proud of that. We just got to be able to follow with what we preach and actually welcome these people in here. I have set up in the three communities of Dulwich and Chilton Miles welcoming committees. We contacted the HR departments of all the companies. Each time they give an appointment to a person, we invite them in, sit down with some of our members of staff, have a cup of coffee, give them a booklet on our towns and communities, but actually sit and explain what life is like in a rural town. I only have one town that's got traffic lights. These people come from cities that have no idea. We get frustrated if we have to wait for two cars to cross the street. Things change. So we sit down, have a cup of coffee with them, explain to people who have come from overseas that it's acceptable for a young 18-year-old man to be running through the park in a pair of shorts, no shoes, that's okay, that's Australia. In some Muslim countries, that's not acceptable. So there are differences. Not only do we have to accept them, they have to accept us too. I have many different walks of life from the Ukraine, particularly in the UCG industries. South Africans, Indonesians, Philippines, Bangladeshis, every walk of life. It is wonderful. I have magnificent food outlets, you can see because of the size of me, I eat too much. It is a great opportunity, but we mustn't sell off the family farm. Very crucial. The state government, in which I've been part of in the steering committee, has set out a 7-point future direction statement. Extremely important. They identified things like infrastructure, settlement patterns, social impact, workforce. Because you've got to remember things like the workforce are critical. If the mining sector takes from our existing industry, how does our existing industry cope with that? I can tell you right now that the price of a tractor driver, being a farmer, is $40 an hour. I'm getting $140 a tonne for my sorghum. Is there any money in that? No. Can we survive at that? No. I had a young girl in my workforce, second year out of school, no tertiary education. She was receiving $34,000 a year as a clerical assistant in one of my offices. She left. She's got a job with the mining company. She gets $87,000 a year. Qualification? A car license. She transports people from A to B. That's all she does. How can I compete with that? Arthur mentioned employer of choice. This is the only way we can compete. If you work for a mining company, you work your fixed shift, whether it be 7 days on or 7 days off. The only way you can get out of that is if your partner dies or your mother and father dies, that's it. You don't go to watch your kids at a cultural festival or play sport. That's where it's crucial. I went across to Boddington in Western Australia to have a look how loyalties to the regions work. Here is a small town of 1,200 people, only an hour and a half from Perth. They set up a construction camp of 2,300 mining personnel 5 kilometres out of the town. The government threw $30 million at that town. Did it make a difference? No. There's no community spirit at all. They have a wonderful facility, sporting complex in the middle, beautiful brick complex, lawn bowls, netball courts, Aussie rules grounds, cricket grounds, tennis courts. Everything there, 22 members. You can't buy community spirit. And that's what all our communities through rural and regional Australia have. They're unique, and we must maintain them. When you drive through a town, just for instance, say, I'll tell you about local government. Last year, the commission asked how many hours per week I worked. I worked 72 hours per week for the whole year, just on local government issues. It is an absolute juggernaut that's coming at us. 80% of my life is with the energy sector. When you find a girl sleeping in a car in one of your nice quiet country towns because she's been evicted from her house at $240 a week that she was paying rent, so a mining guys could come in and rent it at $450. She had to wait 3 weeks to get into another house. As I said, at $17.40 an hour, she didn't get a pay rise. We need those services. In Roma at the moment, McDonald's has a turnover rate of 1,000%. Are there any local people employed there? They're all 457 visas. They had to close a shop for a lawnmower machinery place. We've had magnificent floods up there, so there's plenty of grass to mow. The place shut the doors. The reason being is they've got no technicians to service the lawnmowers. Because if you've got those skills, you can be in the mines. Blackwater has 6 taxis parked in a shed. No one to drive the taxis. Why would you drive the taxis all hours of the night when you can go and work for the mines and get $100,000 a year? These are the issues. It's the service industries that we're struggling with. And this is what's so essential. We've done across our Western Downs region a needs analysis, but actually to highlight our business capability study. This shows what we import and what we export. And it's quite astounding when you do a study like this to find out what is actually out there. I had one little farming family exporting poodles to the world. I was dumbfounded. I mean, I try to control dingoes, and here's this company exporting poodles. How much money a year do you make? Oh, $300,000. Oh, is that right? There are opportunities there. Technologies have changed. There are people out there extremely smart. Let's tap into it. A lot of the companies have developed programs in our schools for scholarships. It is the first time that I can remember where now our children, instead of leaving our rural areas to go away to school, actually have an opportunity to come home and work. When I go and address the year 9s and 10s, because they're your crucial age barrier, what do they want to do in the future? They want to finish year 12, go to uni, get a degree and come back and work in the energy sector. Haven't things changed? There's always been a mass exodus of our youth from our rural areas. These types of industries have given us the opportunity to bring our young people back into our region. The key issues that we also struggle with is professional services. Industries like childcare centres. When you get a massive growth like this, and you find that there's 128 children waiting on a list to get into a childcare centre, you think, well, how do I fix this one up? You've got to remember, I have 23 towns. You can't build them in every town. So, yes, you can go and put the bricks and mortar there. That's not the issue. It's the people that actually have to run that and supervise those kids. They're the ones we don't have. When you go and find the extract of teachers from last year alone who actually went and joined these companies, we lost school teachers who are now working in the mining sector. I lost 2 police officers, 1 a sergeant, who are now working in the mining sector. I lost my chief paramedic, who's now working in the mining sector. The loss is our people again. The gain was for the mining sector. They have this huge wealth. And when we talk about the dollars, you know, the 140, they're more powerful than our state government. They wield a lot of pressure. Is it all about royalties? Or should we start to put some framework back into our communities to cope with them? The issue of housing is a critical one. It is great to be in a shire, a regional area, that has massive growth. It's better than massive decline. It has a lot of challenges and pain. Last thing you want is rentals to go to $1,000 a week. And guess what? I picked the paper up on last week and I saw one there for $950 a week. It's happening. The state government do not have the funds to put affordable community housing in place. So we have to entice developers. How we do that are in many streams. When I talked to the government, Premier Bligh in my case, she said, oh look, I'm looking at a $3,000 Leave the South East Corner program to try and encourage people to get out of the South East Corner. When she opened the letter and told me that, I said, you triple it and we'll talk. So she came out to our area the other day and said, we'll talk. On top of that, some of these companies got very innovative ways of encouraging people. One company offered the first 3 years of mortgage payments on a home. Now you do the sums on that. You had houses in Miles that were worth $100,000 18 months ago. There's not one house there now under $300,000. If you have to pay the first 3 years of mortgages, it's not a bad incentive, is it? But I have another company who says, we don't want to be a bar of that at all. That's not our game. I'll just give you the extra $30,000 a year and you work out where you want to live. This is the obscene amount of money these companies have. Am I going? The issues in development, in Chinchilla for instance, when I took office 2 years ago, I thought we had enough industrial land for 20 years. Within 6 months, it was all gone, totally gone. We redeveloped twice that again, immediately. Within a year, it was all gone. The speed of development is absolutely horrendous. All I'm asking is that the state governments, and I'm sure New South Wales is very similar, not to have a code of practice or a code of conduct by these companies, but to actually have policies, regulations and legislation to make them do what we want for our communities. I have great doubts about the coal seam gas industry, particularly the underground water aquifers. I believe that you, as my understanding of your Petroleum Act here in New South Wales, must ensure adequate state legislation for groundwater modelling to actually prove that the water is not linked. You also have to have groundwater monitoring to make sure that there's a process of checks and balances. As I mentioned about the underground coal gasification, there's been a lot of discussion in open cut mining. The underground coal gasification is a huge monster. When you can burn coal at 1600 degrees, create what's called a wet gas or syn gas, you can produce anything from urea at a rate of 1,000 tonne per day. I'm talking about what's called a simple train. One of these square kilometres of UCG can last 50 years. Not only can it produce 1,000 tonne of fertiliser per day, it can produce 20,000 barrels of fuel. It's just by adjusting the mix. You can produce ammonium nitrate, and you can produce steam for gas production and electricity. It is a huge avenue for the energy sector. We are humans. We are at the top of the food chain, and we are terribly hungry little energy beasts. We love to have those lights, and we love to have the air cons. So therefore, we will have a carbon impact in some form. Our job is to make sure that the state and federal governments minimise that impact as best we can. When you look at a tonne of coal and the energy that can be extracted from a tonne of coal, by open cut coal mining, it's in that figure between 6% and 8%. The same tonne of coal in the coal seam gas industry is in that 80% figure. That's a huge difference. That same tonne of coal in underground coal gasification is 96%. But your contaminants stay underground. Is that good? All we're doing is hiding it. I'm just saying that with all development, there is some pain. The number one thing we must remember is to be proactive and not be reactive. My state are working very hard to try and get to that stage of treading water with the companies. These are huge companies, and announcements of things like $80 billion in an LNG complex are big numbers. These companies in their EIS processes, of which I'm doing six of these at the moment, one company's got $100 million to plan in my community just to get their EIS through. I mean, you think they're big figures, but when you talk $80 billion, is it called blood money? I mean, I want my grandson to be able to run around on the farm in the future. It would be great. But the difference might be that the tractor that he drives will be fired by coal seam gas. I work with the university in Toowoomba, and we're on our third tractor that is run by compressed coal seam gas. There are ways of actually adding this to our system, but the most important thing of all is our community. They're our greatest resource, and don't let us forget about it. Thank you.
That was very, very sobering. I feel like cutting my throat now. Is there any hope?
Yes, ma'am.
I'll take one question because we're a bit short of time. It better be a good one. Okay. Dr. Barrett.
Well, I have been following the most well-balanced exposition I've heard. And I fear my question therefore is going to be very proudly or very foolhardy. But given what we know, given that we've read the science on global warming and I think it's probably right that what we're doing is contributing to the development of land producers, and that we are, this is going to give us a problem with adaptation, because you spoke of this overall role in nature, and you've got two choices really. One is adapt to it, and we must be able to do that, or the other is to resist it. And there is a case for resisting it, given all the things you've said. And particularly given global warming, which is very possibly a great part. We know governments are wedded to this income divided royalties, but we vote governments in and out. Do you think there is any sense or any possibility of resisting this general? We've seen what's happened in Hunter Valley. We don't really want to wait until tomorrow morning and see how we can resist it.
I think there's $10 million at stake. Every state government and federal government's in debt at the moment. They seem to be wool blind with the amount of royalties. To me, I'm lucky I'm in local government. We don't have politics. Our politics are our people. And I think this is the issue. The state and federal governments are locked into a 3-year cycle. It's all they're worried about. They have grave concerns of resisting it. I don't think so. We're an energy-starved, you know, life at the moment. I do believe deep down there are some wins with this. If you think of the Latrobe Valley and the amount of brown coal that is produced and firing the power stations in Victoria, they are twice as pollutant as the black coal power stations in Queensland, which are twice as pollutant as the coal seam gas industry. If they use the coal seam gas, for instance, and fed it through the national network, and they shut the brown-fired coal power stations in Victoria down, we have met the Kyoto Agreement overnight. Is that the hidden agenda? The thing is, it will have an impact. I'm really deeply concerned about the underground water aquifers. I believe the salt solution, there are ways to address it. At presently, we import 1 million tonne of salt a year into this country for industrial purposes to mix with bauxite to make aluminium and other processes. That's where your big companies like Orica are involved. Well, let's use this salt. We're at the headwaters of the Murray-Darling catchment. My wife's from Adelaide. How the hell do you think I'd feel if we kept polluting the river system? That is not what we want here. All those waste products must be controlled. And it comes down to the state government. I think they're actually floundering, and that's all governments at the moment. These companies are huge, well-resourced, a lot of data. It is about time our governments release the data so us as humans and the community can actually know what we're talking about. It's okay for me, I have a huge amount of knowledge of the industry. The general public don't, and there is a fear factor. And as a farmer, you can see where my side is. It's the environment I'm very concerned about. I want a life, not for 30 years or 50 years. I want a life when I'm long gone, and to make sure some bugger doesn't come back and say to me, well, you're the bugger that bloody made this all happen. So it's those protection measures that we must put in place. And that does start with the state government. They get the royalties. We just want them to put the checks and balances in place. Okay?
Could you all join me in thanking Councillor Ray Brown? Thank you. Now I'd like to introduce Danny Lester, our final speaker for this session.